on the forest floor. As I watch, the lump rises, then falls. My mouth runs dry. It's a fallen E-Rex. Down, but not dead. I scoot forward slightly, taking in more of the shape. It's young, maybe a third of the size of the adults. I have no idea how that translates into age. A deep gash runs from its back to its right leg. The wound is dry, the blood caked along the deep rut like a red canyon in the American West. No one moves. We're less than 10 feet from the animal, practically right on top of it. Turning back to face us, Brightwell brings a finger to where her lips are behind the mask, urging us to keep quiet, then points forward. She takes a step, then another. Slowly, careful not to make any noise. We follow suit, creeping like burglars in the night. I can barely take my eyes off the injured animal. Behind it, a branch bends and pops as a massive E-Rex head rises above the sleeping youth. This one is an adult, no question about it. It isn't injured. It peers directly at us. We freeze, no one moving a muscle. Time stands still. The beast rises to its full height, towering over us. It leans forward, cocking its head as if puzzled by what it sees. Against my will, my breathing accelerates. My chest heaves. Beneath the infrared dampening suit, I break into a sweat. The E-Rex's nostrils flare. It pans left and right, scanning the group, and then raises its head to gaze past us, seeming to compare the two views. It takes a step forward, leapfrogging the downed child, probably its offspring. To the soldier's credit, no one flinches as the E-Rex moves to within feet of us. It again scans back and forth. Finally, its gaze lands on the soldier closest to it. With its head, it moves forward and touches the rifle. It draws back, probably wincing from the cold steel. It leans in again, mouth open, making for the man's head. Suddenly, the soldier opens fire, emptying round after round into the E-Rex. The beast roars and rears back, its left foot digging into the smaller E-Rex. The other three soldiers begin firing as well. The creature flails and falls, screaming and thrashing in pain. Brightwell's voice rises over the cries of the wounded E-Rex. Move! A strong hand grabs my arm and pulls me forward. We're running along the path now, ignoring the noise. Throughout the jungle, I hear movement. I'm blinded to it. All I see is the path forward, the soldier in front of me. In a flash, that person is gone. A massive set of jaws clamp around the body and squeeze tight as the E-Rex crosses the path in a full run. The team turns and fires. Another beast roars to my right. Brightwell and the soldier next to her focus their shots on it. A bellow echoes behind me and I turn to see our last soldier open up with automatic gunfire, the rounds hitting the E-Rex like a powerful wave, forcing it back but not felling it. The beast dives forward, coming down on the soldier, its head crushing him like a hammer, the man's rifle falling harmlessly to the ground. I flick the safety off my rifle and hold the trigger down, unloading rounds into the E-Rex. But I'm too late. It's too close. With its head, it sideswipes me, tossing my body like a rag doll. I land against a massive trunk, one of the few still standing. My head swims. Ache pulses through my body. My gun is gone. I hear the E-Rex descending upon the fallen soldier. The man cries out, the sound agonizing. I reach into my pocket and wrap my fingers around the cold, round object. I flick out the pin and toss it toward the beast.
Chapter 22. James. Lying in the pit, I listen as Arthur leads the E-Rex away. He calls to them, taunting, and they come running. There must be 100 of them within earshot, maybe more. The dirt and ice cover me completely. The cloth over my face prevents the dirt from getting into my mouth or nostrils, which I'm thankful for because my breathing accelerates as the herd grows closer, my body responding involuntarily to my growing fear. Soon they're flowing around me, pounding the ground, and leaping the gully with a whooshing sound. Against my will, I feel myself shivering. from cold, fear, or a combination of both. If one of those erects misses the mark and oversteps the bank, its massive claws will gouge right into me, gutting me. Arthur's voice grows faint, drowned out by the herd rushing through the jungle. They're moving over me like a thunderstorm now, rumbling and rattling me as they pass. Time stops. I lie there in darkness, the weight of the dirt upon me, the dampness of the ground below slowly seeping into me, as if this world has swallowed me and is slowly digesting my body. After a few minutes, or what I think is a few minutes, could be an hour for all I know, the flow of erects tapers off, and then there's silence again. Out of nowhere, a paw presses down on the dirt above. It digs, shoveling the dirt off me rapidly. For a second, I consider remaining still. But then I realize, whatever it is, it already knows I'm down here. I have to fight. My battered body won't be much use in that department. But if I'm going out, it will be swinging. Lifting my arms, I rock from side to side as I rise from the dirt and ice. I grit my teeth against the pain and jerk the cloth from my face, ready to look the predator in the eye. Arthur is squatting next to me, hand covered in dirt. "You could have announced yourself," I hiss, rubbing the dirt from my neck and hair.
"I was scared you'd respond and call attention to us, which you just did."
He holds his hand out. Is he offering to help me up?
"The gun," he mouths silently.
"It's empty," I whisper. "It's a single shot."
"I know. Hand it over."
I can't see any harm in it, so I hand him the weapon. With his left hand, now his only hand, he deftly disassembles the device, using his knees to hold it. What's he looking for? He then grabs some of the wires dangling from his right shoulder, where his arm used to be attached. He pulls them out as far as he can, examines them for a moment, uses his teeth to strip them, and attaches them to the gun, near the battery compartment. Then he waits. I finally realize what he's doing, charging the weapon.
"How'd you get away?"
I whisper.
"I determined their visual range by changing course and seeing how they responded. When I was far enough away, I climbed a tree and waited for them to pass."
"With one arm?"
"And two legs. You made this body more capable than the Oscar unit.
Oliver was a military prototype."
"Be glad. The extra strength probably saved your life."
He disconnects the gun from the wires, and to my surprise, he hands it to me.
"We may need it," he says simply. "Can you walk?"
"I can try." My body still aches from the tree limbs and brush that fell on me, and now I've been buried twice. That hasn't helped. I stand on shaky legs, pain throbbing.
"I'll carry you," Arthur says.
"We're going to the evac cave," I insist quietly.
"The evac cave it is," he mutters, bending down.
Across the jungle, automatic gunfire erupts. More weapons join the fight, at least three or four people shooting at each other, or an erex. An explosion overpowers the gunfire. It sounds like a bomb or a grenade. It has to be someone from Jericho City, possibly Emma or Alex. "Let's go."
Arthur cocks his head. "Toward the gunfire? Bad idea."
"I'm going, with or without you." I slip the gun into my pocket and take a step up the bank, leaning forward, placing a hand on the ground to crawl up on all fours. Arthur moves in front of me and stoops, offering his back.
"Get on."
Up ahead, the battle rages. Two more explosions flash in the distance, bright enough to shine through the thick trees. The canopy shakes from the blasts. Arthur trudges along, me on his back, trying to stay quiet. I don't see the point. We're racing toward a battle.
"Faster,"
I whisper. He complies, but I know he's still far from his top speed. He seems bent on keeping me out of the fight, on protecting me. Again, I can't see a reason why. That mystery is as thick as the fog surrounding us. Soon I smell smoke and the odor of burning flesh. Arthur comes to a sudden halt, almost throwing me off. He squats, and I put my feet on the ground.
"They're 50 feet ahead," he whispers.
"How many?"
"4 dead erects."
"Humans?"
"3.
Dead?
Two. One dying. That could be Emma. I rise, but Arthur catches my arm. There are three E-Recs 100 feet from us, 25 degrees from our current vector. Are they devouring a dead E-Rex? They'll be done soon.
Then we better hurry.
I snake through the thick foliage, the damp snow-covered leaves brushing against me. My feet sink into the mushy ground. Ahead I catch sight of a body, mangled, unmoving. A deep pit spreads out beside it. Half an E-Rex carcass lies nearby. Holding the energy weapon in one hand, I make my way to the dead soldier, who's wearing an infrared cloaking suit. Emma has one too, as do Brightwell and some of her troops. Gently I pull back the face mask. It's a young man with a few days' stubble. He's a special forces soldier I've seen around, but I don't know his name. I look around, taking stock. This is the path to the evac cave.
Where's the live one?
I whisper to Arthur. Crouching, he leads me down the path, past another dead E-Rex. Ahead, another suited figure lies against a tree trunk, unmoving.
Chapter 23. Emma. The grenade lands on the far side of the E-Rex. I expect it to go off instantly, but it doesn't. Time seems to stand still. The beast roars and tears into the soldier. Gunfire rakes over it. The E-Rex reels back, screaming, blood covering its teeth. I try to push up, to crawl to my rifle lying on the ground, but the pain from my battered body keeps me pinned to the ground, wedged against the fallen tree. Finally, my grenade explodes. The sound is deafening, then total silence. The blast shreds the E-Rex. Pieces of meat and blood spray across my body. Dirt falls like rain. The force presses my body into the fallen tree, crushing me for a split second. When it passes, I roll forward face down. More dirt and debris land on my back. A shrill ringing sounds in my ears, unceasing. I feel sick, on the verge of vomiting. I push up enough to turn my head toward the path. Tracer fire lances out through the fog and smoke. Slowly other sounds bleed through the ringing. Gunfire and the cries of E-Rex. Shrieks of pain and anger. It sounds like 100 of them are swarming us. I try to stand, but the pain is so strong it's nauseating. Instead, I crawl on my knees and elbows to my rifle. Cradling it, I roll onto my side, searching for a target. Three E-Rex race across the path, making passes at the troops, who are firing mercilessly, then recede into the fog before attacking again. I switch the gun to semi-automatic and train my sight on the closest E-Rex targeting its head. As I pull the trigger, another grenade goes off. The blast rolls me like a barrel down a hill. My rifle flies out of my hand. The ringing is louder now, all-consuming. My heart races. My lungs gasp for air. The incessant ringing and my ragged breaths are the only thing I hear. Another flash goes off, pushing a wave of force and heat into me. I stare straight ahead, unable to move. Debris rains down. I teeter on the edge of consciousness. My head swims. Vision blurs.
Chapter 24. James. I take a step toward the fallen soldier, but Arthur waves me off. Dead, he motions to a copse of trees off the path. The live ones over there. The forest is quiet now, but smoke still rises from the scorched ground like ghosts in a graveyard. I creep carefully, mindful not to step on a branch. Behind the bushes, another suited figure lies in the dirt, a man with a deep gash across his back. The mask is off, revealing short blonde hair. I squat down beside him and call out quietly, "Hey!" The man turns his head, looking up at me with bloodshot, weary eyes. "I'm gonna get you out of here." Arthur grabs my arm and jerks me away. "James, they're coming." I pull back from Arthur, breaking his grip. To my right, I hear branches snapping. The E-Rex are closing in. "James," Arthur hisses, "we have to go."
"I'm not leaving him."
To the wounded soldier lying on the ground, I whisper,
"Can you walk?" "I don't know."
Arthur reaches into the pile of fallen limbs beside us, casting about noisily. I shoot him a glance, alarmed. "They've seen you. They're coming anyway." He rises up with a long, sharpened branch and hurls it through the jungle like a javelin. An Erex cries out in the fog-filled forest, a scream of pain. Roars of anger follow, from other Erex, I assume. "Go," Arthur says, pointing to the south. The cave is due east.
"The cave?"
"Too far away." Arthur grabs another limb from the pile of brush and throws it. This one must not have stuck. The screeching reply is far less anguished. I grab the soldier's arm and pull him up, eliciting a strained grunt. The man's legs hang limp, unmoving. I wonder if the wound in his back severed his spine.
"Carry him, Arthur."
He flashes his eyes at me, but throws the man over his shoulder and begins pounding through the jungle. I follow behind. The limbs and leaves scrape across me, slowing me down and soaking me with water and snow. I put my head down and keep charging. Just ahead, Arthur bounds deftly over the fallen trees and through the dense shrubs. The beasts roar, and I chance a look back. There are two of them, towering Erex, probably 20 feet tall. I stop, draw the energy weapon, and take a deep breath, aiming. The shot hits the closest Erex on the right side of its chest, spinning the animal to the ground. The other slows, turning to look back. I don't wait. I turn and sprint, trying to catch up to Arthur. For a moment, I think I've lost him. I don't hear his footsteps or the sounds of him crashing through the brush. I hear only the wind, except it's not the wind. As I burst through a thicket, I realize it's the river that bounds the eastern jungle to the south. Arthur stands on the bank, the wounded soldier still draped over his shoulder. 10 feet below, the river is surging from the stormwater. It's deep and wide here, moving at twice its normal speed.
"Jump!"
Arthur yells over the sound of the water.
"No way!"
Without a word, Arthur tosses the man into the stream. Behind me, I hear a branch crack, then another. The Erex are coming. Without the use of his legs, I doubt that soldier will survive in the river. And with no cloaking suit and no weapons, I probably can't survive here on land. Staring at Arthur, shaking my head, I take 3 steps toward the river and jump.
Chapter 25. Emma. I just want to close my eyes and go to sleep. But I know if I do, I might never open them again, never see my children or my husband again. I roll over and push up on my elbows, but I collapse quickly. I'm too weak, too dizzy. I crawl, elbows pulling me forward, feet pushing. When I reach the path, the clouds and smoke in front of me clear. It's nothing but dead Erex and soldiers strewn across the dirt road like rag dolls, unmoving. I crawl, inches at a time. Suddenly, I feel fingers wrap around my forearm and roll me over onto my back. The person lifts me and carries me through the fog, their legs weak, gait uneven. I can't see the face, but I know the voice. "Stay quiet," Brightwell says, as she staggers along the path. I reach up and lock my hands behind her neck and pull, trying to take some weight off her arms. After a minute, she stumbles and falls to the ground. I roll out of her grasp. The impact rocks my body, but the disorientation is the worst. The fog is back. Brightwell's voice is strained, a soft croak coming from somewhere inside the cloud. "Sorry." I push up, ready to crawl back to her, to try to help her. At that moment, I realize I'm not alone. 3 figures surround me, towering over me. One bends down and lifts me up, carrying me with ease. I recognize him, and the others. They're soldiers who were evacuated to the cave. The sound drew them. "Wait," I whisper. "There's someone else. Over there. Save her." As the soldier whisks me away, I hear Brightwell groan and see the other two helping her up. Soon the mouth of the cave looms ahead. The temperature seems to drop 10 degrees when we cross the threshold. ATVs and trailers loom 30 feet inside. Beyond them, the cave forks. The soldier carrying me switches on his headlamp, lighting our way. I desperately want to put my feet down and walk. I don't want my children to see me this way. It'll terrify them. Now more than ever, they need to feel safe. Stop, I breathe out, voice scratchy. He slows but doesn't halt. Put me down. I need a second. Finally, he comes to a halt and gently lowers me to the ground. It takes a few seconds, but finally I manage to stand. Brightwell arrives at that moment, arm around a corporal who's helping her along, the third soldier bringing up the rear. Her mask is off, face bruised, steely resolve in her eyes. Thank you, I say to her. You're welcome. She turns to the man beside me. Sergeant, there are three more in our party. Send a team to check for survivors. He nods and disappears deeper into the cave, probably to gather his team. James is still out there, I say to Brightwell. She bunches her eyebrows, thinking. We barely got here, Emma. If he's out there, he's probably hunkered down, waiting out the storm and herds. I chew my lip, wishing there was something I could do. Brightwell places a hand on my arm. We'll look for him as soon as the herds leave the eastern jungle. That could take days or months. He's out there alone. If anyone can survive out there, he can. What about us with the E-Rex in the jungle? We can't get back to Jericho City, and the people there can't get here. We don't have enough food to stay in this cave for long. She nods gravely. We can only hope we have enough time to wait them out. Unless we can drive them away somehow. I think for a moment. A fire, maybe? Brightwell shakes her head. A lot of trees are down. They're waterlogged from lying in the rain and snow-soaked dirt. A fire wouldn't burn far. It might even draw them. We're trapped. But I'm not giving up. I can tell Brightwell isn't either. Let's talk again, after we've rested. There's got to be a way. She nods. Yes, ma'am. I turn and head deeper into the cave. My gait is awkward, my legs still wobbly. One of the soldiers walks beside me, ready to catch me if I fall. With every step, I feel a little surer on my feet. Behind me, Brightwell is requesting a status update from one of her troops. Her voice fades as the cave meanders and turns. The soldier's headlamp bores into the darkness, revealing the cavern in narrow swaths. The walls are gray and black, damp with condensation. After a minute or so, I begin seeing a substance on the cave wall, a gray sponge I've never seen before. It looks almost like sea coral, but I figure it's a fungus of some sort, or the Eos equivalent. Up ahead, a side tunnel breaks off to the right. The soldier makes the turn, and I'm relieved to see my fellow colonists lying on sleeping bags and sheets, gathered in groups of 4 and 5. As we approach, they squint and turn away from the bright light. A woman in the corner rises, an arm held up to block the headlamp. It's my sister, Madison. She snakes her way through the crowd and lunges when she reaches me, wrapping me in a tight hug. I groan, and she instantly releases me. You're hurt? I pull her back into the hug, ignoring the pain. I'll be fine. Where are the kids? Over here. Holding my hand, Madison leads me through the crowd to the corner, where Sam and Allie are lying next to each other, both asleep. My sister-in-law, Abby, is holding Carson, who's also asleep. My heart bursts. Tears well in my eyes. They're okay. Across the way, a boy coughs, then an adult. I lower myself to the floor of the cave. It's hard and cold and a little damp, but here on the floor of this cave is the only place I want to be right now. I stretch out next to my children, and sleep instantly overtakes me.
Chapter 26. James. I plunge into the water, sinking in over my head, the cold hitting me like an electric prod. For a moment, I feel completely disoriented, as if I'm floating through the cold dark of space. Finally, my body rises toward the surface. A current grips me, turning and flipping me. My head breaches the surface, and I gasp once before I'm plunged back underwater. Light and darkness flash in sequence as the river rolls me. I try to right myself, arms and legs spinning. Arthur runs along the bank, eyes trained on me, his only arm clawing the branches and shrubs out of his path. His body is watertight and built to withstand punctures, but the massive hole where his right arm used to be makes all of that irrelevant. If he gets in the water, it'll flood right in. He has to stay on the bank. He's not alone there. An E-Rex emerges from the jungle where I jumped off, screaming as it stares down from the bank. The cold-blooded beast can't follow me in. For that reason, it was a good move by Arthur. Throwing the soldier in was probably the only way to get me in the river, and the river was probably my only hope of escaping the E-Rex. Up ahead, the wounded soldier is floating face down in the stream. I kick my feet and swim to him, the current helping me along. My feet can't touch the ground. It's awkward, but I manage to turn him over and get my left arm around his torso. His eyes open, and he spits out water and coughs, the sound barely audible over the rushing of the water. I paddle with one arm toward the bank, kicking my feet furiously to keep us both above water, hoping to hit the river floor. Arthur points furiously downriver, urging me to stay in the water. He's right. I need to get past the eastern jungle. But my arms are giving out. My legs feel like lead in the water already. I don't know if it's the extra weight of the man I'm pulling, the water soaking into my clothes, or the strength of the current, but I feel myself sinking, losing the battle to stay above water. I have to get to the bank, if only to rest. Still jogging along the bank, Arthur points downriver again. I shake my head. I can't do it. I'm too weak. I keep paddling toward the bank, making slow progress. I wish my feet could reach the riverbed. Arthur eyes me and disappears into the jungle. My head goes under, and I gulp frigid water, which seems to freeze my chest from the inside. I fight with my free arm, kick, and spit out as I break the surface. Water covers my eyes. I flip onto my back, momentarily losing my grip on the soldier. I turn and swim harder then, catching him and trying again unsuccessfully to float on my back with my arm around him. The current is whipping me around. I have to float. It's my only chance.
Chapter 27 Emma. I wake to coughing all around me. The sound bounces off the cave walls, echoing without end. An LED lamp sits in the corner, casting faint light into the cavern where I lie, my family around me. Allie and Sam are sleeping. Madison sits with her legs crossed, staring, unblinking. A gray haze hangs over the group of sleeping colonists. Is it a cloud of fog that has drifted deeper into the cave? It must be. My arms are shaky as I push up. "Hi," Madison whispers. "Hi. Thanks for taking care of the kids." "Sure. How is it out there?" "Dangerous." I barely have the strength for more words, and there really isn't much more to say. Between the E-Rex and the storms outside the cave, it's quite simply dangerous out there. "How long have I been out?" I ask. She coughs, then shrugs. "Don't know. Left my watch at home." Home. That word cuts like a knife. I definitely don't have the strength to tell her what happened to the city. After a moment, Madison reaches into her bag and draws out an MRE. Meal, ready to eat. It's chicken noodle soup, one of my favorites. I eat quietly, listening to the coughing, wondering if it's just the cold or the air down here. In the dim light, I spot specks of gray settling on the food. "It's from those things on the walls," Madison says quietly. "They spit them out if you get too close." I try to push the gray gunk aside and finish the meal as quickly as possible. We can't afford to waste food. As I swallow the last bite, I feel a film of grit in my throat. I cough, trying to clear it, but it won't go away, like a tickle cough that lingers. Madison hands me a bottle of water. It never really goes away. You just get used to coughing. Thanks, I reply, swallowing the water down. I'm going to make some rounds. My body aches as I rise, but I push on. Nearby, Abby is holding Carson. My 7-month-old son is sleeping peacefully. I'm thankful for that. How has he been? I whisper. Surprisingly good. I think he likes it down here. She's trying to reassure me, but I can see the worry on her face. I kiss my sleeping baby on the forehead, squeeze his small hand with my thumb and forefinger, and venture out of the cavern and into the passage. Up ahead, the corridor ends in a T-intersection. Soft light glows from the right side of the intersection, just bright enough to light my way. As I approach, I hear a man's voice. There's no way Young could have thrown that spike. A woman responds, You think it was Sinclair? The guy's a scientist, not a Super Bowl quarterback. The man again. No quarterback could have thrown that. As I round the turn, a soldier with short black hair sees me. Mayor, he says quickly, silencing the other 3 soldiers, a woman and 2 men. The woman is wearing an infrared cloaking suit with a tear across the back that has been repaired with glue and stitches. It's a suit from one of the troops who died on the path. Colonel Brightwell is at the CP, ma'am, the man says. I'll lead you to her. The soldiers nod and cough as I pass. As we walk, the cave floor inclines and the temperature rises. Soon the sponges on the walls thin out and disappear, taking the gray cloud of particles with them, leaving only damp, bare stone. I can breathe a little easier as I approach the command post, which lies just inside the mouth of the cave. Brightwell sits in the bed of an ATV trailer, studying a tablet. Her troops nod at me as I pass. How long was I out? I ask when she looks up. Probably not long enough. You rescued the troops. She cuts her eyes to another trailer, where a blanket covers long lumps. Bodies, I assume. 2 casualties. We had 3 troops with us. Yes, ma'am. 1 still MIA. MIA. Missing in action. You think he escaped? I hope so, Brightwell says, glancing down at the tablet. It could have been taken by one of the E-Rex. She turns the tablet toward me, revealing a picture of an E-Rex lying in the snow with what looks like a pole sticking out of its mouth. It clearly pierced the brain, but it didn't exit the other side. We think someone felled one with this makeshift spear. Could James have done this? Maybe. If he had rigged up a launching system, or planted the spike in the ground. We think it was thrown. Brightwell points to the disturbed snow in front of the fallen beast. Look at the way it fell. As if the object hit it from the front with some force. It means he's out there. So it would seem, Brightwell whispers, refocusing on the tablet. Or someone from Jericho City. Or someone else. Who else could it be? A good question, she says, not making eye contact. I can tell she has a theory. We need to look for him. Brightwell shakes her head. The team searched the path and the area around it. There's still a lot of E-Rex out there. I'll send a team as soon as we can. James can't survive out there. Brightwell turns the tablet back to me. If he did this, I'd say he's probably safer than we are. I sit down next to Brightwell, taking the load off my aching legs. What now? We wait? For the moment. Everyone deeper in the cave is coughing. It's the gray dust in the air. Must be an irritant. Why didn't we know about that? The particles are only deeper in the cave. The survey team didn't go deep enough to detect them. We'll start bringing people up in groups to get fresh air. I'm sure it'll be fine once we leave the cave.
Chapter 28. James. A loud splash near me showers cold water down. I look up to see a wide, flat piece of wood floating in the water. A piece of a tree the storm sheared off. Arthur is back on the bank, pointing at it. Swimming with every shred of strength I have, I pull up to the piece of wood and begin kicking to reach the soldier, who is rolling in the current, face up, then face down. I grab him and pull him up, and thankfully he grips it with my arm around him. We both hold onto the wood as it bobs along the river, our legs dangling off the back. Arthur watches from the bank, snaking his way through the brush. After a few minutes, the jungle thins and stops, replaced by dark sand that leads to the grassy plain, or whatever grass the fire left behind. Jericho City is north of here. I kick toward the bank, but Arthur points downriver again. He's probably right. The western jungle is our best chance of avoiding the E-Rex. The blue-green tall grass is indeed burned around Jericho City, but the blades stand tall farther to the west. The rain and the storm must have extinguished the fire. A thick forest gradually replaces the grass. Since the sun doesn't move here on Eos, I have no way to gauge the passage of time. The part of me that's out of the water is still soaked, I know that. I reach over and shake the soldier, who turns and looks back at me with eyes as tired as I feel. But he's alive. We both are. That's what matters. He mouths a word that I think is thanks. I nod and we float down the river, watching the landscape flow by. Soon I begin spotting fallen trees, split and trampled. The water is getting warmer by the minute. Arthur disappears from the bank and returns with a long, narrow limb, which he extends to me. I hold tight as he pulls us out of the water. I'm still shivering, but the soldier is shaking worse. It's not just the cold. He's lost a lot of blood. "What's your name?" I ask, still trying to gather my breath. His eyes closed, he mouths a barely audible response.
"Ryan Young, Corporal."
"All right, Corporal Ryan Young, we're gonna get you fixed up." Arthur throws his head back, then gives me an exasperated look. "Help me move him," I mutter. We drag him deeper into the jungle and gently lay him down. I examine the corporal's wound, which cuts across his back and spine. I don't think it's severed the spinal cord, but it might be bruised. There's some swelling halfway down his back. He needs a real doctor. He needs a Zumi. And I need some answers. "What happened to Jericho City?" I ask, still checking him for other cuts and bruises. "I saw the burned field and the E-Rex stampede."
"Brightwell sent Alpha and Bravo teams into the jungle to try to divert the herds."
Young swallows.
"Didn't work. Mayor burned the field, brought the canopy down, evacuated."
The word strikes me like a sledgehammer to my gut, confirming my worst fear. "To the cave at the base of the Eastern Mountains?" His head rolls to the side as he nods. I'm too late. For a moment I sit there stunned. Finally I grip his shoulders and shake him lightly, forcing him to open his eyes. "Did everyone go to the cave?" He shakes his head.
"No time."
"Some stayed in Jericho City?" He nods.
"Yes."
"They're still there?"
"Yes,"
he gasps, breathing unevenly. "Is Emma still in Jericho City?"
"Who?"
"Mayor Matthews. Is she still in Jericho City?"
"No. Path."
"What?" I lean closer, listening as he mumbles. He's passing out.
"Suit. Path."
Suit, path. She had one of the infrared blocking suits. She was on the path. Three people in suits, two dead. I checked one, but I didn't check the other one. The body propped up against the tree. It was her. I collapse back, sitting on the ground, eyes drifting away from the man. I feel as if my body is shutting down. I'm numb. Arthur's voice sounds distant, as though I'm hearing it through a glass wall. "In your group that fought on the path to the cave?" I don't hear the reply. Only the word. "Grenade." "She set off a grenade?" Arthur asks.
"Yes."
"She's dead. My wife is dead." The world fades away. Arthur is speaking to me, but I don't hear him. I don't feel anything but a hurt deep inside, in a place I never knew existed.
Chapter 29. Emma. When I return to the cavern where my family is staying, Allie and Sam are both awake. The coughing is louder now. Almost everyone is sitting up.
Mommy?
Allie says, reaching out for me as I approach. I hug her tight, feeling how fragile she is in my arms. As she lays her head on my shoulder, I pull Sam to me. He's not my biological son, but he's every bit a part of our family, and I've worked hard to make him feel that way. He's lived with us since he lost his birth parents in the asteroid strikes on Earth, and with each passing month, he's warmed up more and more to James, Allie, Carson, and me. When I release Allie, she coughs into my chest. I place a hand on her forehead and feel sweat and heat there.
Mommy, I'm sick,
she whines. Sam coughs as well, but he's stoic. Looking around, I realize almost everyone is watery-eyed and coughing. It's okay, sweetie. It's just the air down here.
I want to go home, she says, coughing again.
We will.
When?
Soon, sweetie. I'll be right back. The cave has a series of chambers, almost like bunk rooms off the main corridor. After taking stock of the colonists in these other chambers, I'm convinced that what's happening to my children is widespread among the population down here. With the help of Brightwell's troops, we move those with the most difficulty breathing toward the entrance of the cave, where there are no sponges on the wall or spores in the air. There are no chambers here either, so people crowd into the main tunnel, lining the walls, coughing, wrapped up in blankets and coats. Even though the air is clear here, the affected colonists still cough. I hope their condition will resolve with time. We have a doctor here, but he's an anesthesiologist. This is a job for Izumi. At the command post, I take Brightwell aside. This feels like more than an allergic reaction. We need Izumi to figure out what we're dealing with. Whatever is sickening us in here may be more dangerous than anything out there. I glance back down the tunnel, where the coughs from the colonists are unceasing. Without her, we may have to leave this cave. Brightwell stares out the entrance into the eastern jungle, where snow is falling and the wind is picking up. I'll send a team for Izumi. The ideal thing would be to walk. It's quieter and less risk of drawing the attention of the E-Rex. But it's slow, and as we've seen, it's no guarantee of safety. She nodded as if making a decision. We'll take a single ATV with three soldiers, heavily armed.
Chapter 30. James. Arthur's voice calls to me. James. James, wake up. I crack my eyes, seeing the fog and shafts of light shining down through the broken tree canopy above. I'm lying on the jungle floor, which is damp and soft. The ground feels as though a tiller has turned it up. But I know it was the herd, tearing this jungle apart as it stampeded through. My body aches, but the worst hurt is inside. My mind drifts to an image of Emma, standing in our flat, kissing me before I left to go look for the spheres on the dark side. She's dead. I lost Earth. Now I've lost her. I wasn't prepared for what happened here on Eos. I should have protected her. Maybe Arthur was right. I should have been more worried about the storms. I should have ignored the buried spheres. I should have gone home. If I had, she might still be alive. James, Arthur growls. Get up. I try to move, but my body won't comply. James. Shut up, I mutter. He bends down, face inches from mine. Get up right now. She's dead. You don't know that. If she's not, she's in the cave, dying. All the more reason to get up. He waits, then grabs me with his only arm and sits me up. Your children need you. Your people need you. Why do you care? Why are you even doing this? That will be revealed in time. I try to peel his hand off my shoulder, but he holds tight. Let me go! No, not until you get up and start fighting for your people. I already did that. Look where it got us. It'll never end. Earth, Eos, it's all the same. Another world, another hell to live through. It will get better,
It won't.
It will. Trust me.
I can't help but laugh. Trust you?
I've lived 1,000 lives on 1,000 worlds, James. I've been fighting for my people for a long time. I close my eyes, feeling the weariness overtake me.
I don't have the strength to argue. Might not even have the strength to stand.
I know you're tired, James. I know you're aching and wet and hungry. I also know that you're going to get up, and you're going to fight for your people. You're going to do whatever it takes, because that's who you are, and because you're their only hope. I don't know what happened to Emma, or your children. They're either hiding in Jericho City, scared and trapped, or they're in the cave, sick and trapped. Either way, your children and your people are counting on you. No one else is coming for them. No one else can help them. It's you, here and now, fighting to save them, where it all ends. He pauses, staring at me. You're going to get up. It's what's inside you. As long as you have something to fight for, you'll fight. Sooner or later, you'll get up and fight. But you need to do it now, because time is running out.
I exhale, knowing he's right, hating that he's right. And finally a piece clicks. You need me to get up, don't you? The grid does.
Now isn't the time.
You aren't here for me. You don't care about me. For some reason, you need me.
I pause, but he doesn't reply.
On the ship, you told me there was a force in the universe more powerful than any you had encountered. You thought matter and energy were the economy of the universe. But there's something else. Two forces at work that are far more powerful. What are they?
Not the time, James. Forget it.
What are those forces at war? This is about that, isn't it? That's why you need me.
You overestimate yourself.
No, I've got it right.
Okay. You go ahead and ask your philosophical questions. I'll wait silently over here until you're ready. Take your time. Right now your kids' fevers are rising. The coughs won't stop. I wonder, do they know something is wrong yet?
Enough!
I snap, anger rising, heart beating fast. I stand, rising above the fog.
A few feet away, Corporal Young leans against a thick tree, eyes closed, breathing shallow.
I walk over and squat to inspect the gash on his back.
Dried blood runs down his suit and onto the ground. The wound is clotted, but he's lost a lot of blood. He probably has internal injuries as well. I have to get him to Izumi soon. Hey, Corporal, can you hear me?
When he doesn't stir, I shake him gently. His eyelids crack open, revealing bloodshot, watery eyes.
Did Izumi evacuate to the cave?
He stares at me as if confused.
Focus, Corporal, I'm asking you a question.
That gets his attention.
Is Izumi still in the city, or is she at the cave?
Who?
Izumi, Dr. Tanaka. Is she at the cave?
No, she stayed behind.
Who else is there?
He shakes his head.
Lots of people.
Why?
No time to evacuate.
I settle back on my haunches. That could be good news. Those who stayed in Jericho City wouldn't have been exposed to the spores in the cave. We might still have a viable population to rebuild from, if we can't find a cure. And Izumi is our only hope of finding that cure. If she's unexposed to the regolith spores, we have a chance. And more, we have the data the Carthage colonists collected. I reach into my pocket and verify that the data drive is still there. It was made for use in space, so it's airtight, and most likely survived being submerged in water. I have to get it to Izumi.
Young swallows and continues speaking, voice strained.
We were checking the path to the cave when the E-Rex attacked. The others are going to follow.
The rest from Jericho City were going to evacuate to the cave?
He nods.
That was the plan.
We need to hurry, Arthur says quietly.
Finally, we agree. Leading me away from Young, Arthur continues, voice quiet.
I wouldn't recommend moving him.
He survived being thrown in the river.
I had to do that. It was better than being eaten alive by an E-Rex. Now I think it's better to leave him here. And he will slow us down.
What do you recommend?
I recommend we get you an IR suit.
What?
I motion to Young. If we're leaving him, I'm certainly not taking his suit.
It won't fit you anyway, and you're right, he needs it. The Erex herds in the eastern jungle could leave at any moment. They'll come back here, likely hungry.
So where do I get a suit? The answer occurs to me instantly. The team's Brightwell sent into the jungle.
Precisely. We'll grab one on the way to Jericho City.
I relate our plan to Corporal Young, who nods wearily, barely opening his eyes. He doesn't seem scared to be left alone. He's probably too tired to be scared. Arthur and I walk in silence, deeper into the western jungle, the roar of the river fading as we go. It's cooler here than I've ever felt it. There's even more debris on the ground here than there was behind us. Arthur pushes aside a limb with purple leaves and freezes. Turning to me, he mouths the word, quiet. He alters his path to the right, stepping carefully, avoiding fallen branches that might crack. After two more steps, I catch sight of the Erex, lying on the ground, eyes staring at me. It's massive, a full-grown adult. Its chest is rising and falling. Is it sleeping? It doesn't move to get up, merely stares at me, its shallow breathing slowly accelerating. It's all I can do not to break into a run. I feel Arthur's hand gripping me, pulling me toward him, urging me to move. 30 feet ahead, I spot another Erex. It's also lying on the ground, on its side, eyes open, just like the last one. Deep gashes run along its body, ruts filled with red, white bones sticking out. As I watch, its torso rises. It's breathing. It's still alive. Arthur motions with his head, urging me to move. A minute later, when we're well beyond the wounded beasts, I grab his arm. What did that to them?
A predator far worse than the Erex.
Chapter 31. Emma. The fever boils me from the inside like a blaze I can't put out. I'm not alone. Everyone is sick now. Adults, children, soldiers, everyone. Whatever those spores are, they have ravaged our population. And sickness isn't our only problem. Standing at the mouth of the cave, I watch the snow fall in sheets. Wind gains speed by the hour, blowing the snow sideways. Another storm waits, just past the eastern mountain range, gathering strength to try to cross the peaks and reach this valley. I hear thunder above, in the clouds, and thunder here on the ground. The herds are fleeing the eastern jungle, fleeing the cold and the storm. That's good news, I think. The wind whistles across the cave entrance, ebbing and flowing. When the sound recedes, I hear ice crunching. Soon, an ATV emerges from the falling snow, pulling a trailer filled with people lying down, covered up with thick blankets. Brightwell's team was supposed to bring back only Izumi. Maybe she's brought some of the wounded with her. We'll have to take precautions to ensure they don't get sick. Bringing them was a risk, but I figure the sheets of snow helped hide their body heat from the Erex, who were probably too busy fleeing to hunt anyway. Soldiers rush past me into the dim, snow-covered jungle. I follow, watching as they usher the people from the trailer into the mouth of the cave. The ATV driver dismounts and pulls off his face mask. It's one of Brightwell's soldiers. One of the passengers pulls off her mask as well. Izumi. How many are sick? She asks, marching toward the cave entrance. Everyone. Behind the first ATV, other vehicles begin arriving. You brought others? I ask. They insisted on it. The city is virtually destroyed. There's no food and very little shelter. Everyone is coming here. Stop them. Use the radio. They may be safer there.
Chapter 32. James. The wind has changed. It's cooler. The orange light that peeks through the broken canopy is slowly faded as clouds gather overhead. The storm is coming from the east, from the dark side. As Arthur and I walk through the jungle, it seems alive with life, as though all the creatures living here are furiously preparing for the coming storm, to hide or to leave. Arthur stops, holds up his hand, and crouches, creeping forward, staying low. He takes cover behind a large plant with wide leaves, then motions for me to follow. When I arrive, I see what alarmed him. Another fallen erex. Like the other two, this animal stares with glassy eyes. It's been ripped apart, too. And it's also still breathing. I study the scene, trying to make sense of it. "Look at the wound," Arthur whispers. Focusing on it, I see something moving, like water flowing across a windshield. What is that? A jelly of some sort, coating the wound? Arthur turns quickly and points at the ground. There's an insect moving there, about the length of my pointer finger. It's completely translucent except for some dirt around its feet. A stinger hangs from its tail. It reminds me of a scorpion, which is technically an arachnid, not an insect. This creature is something in between.
"What is it?"
I whisper. "A native of the western mountain range. They tend to stay close to the desert. Let's just call it the western mountain scorpion." That would explain why I've never seen it before. We've stayed clear of the western mountains. The jungle region that borders those mountains, to the west of where I am now, is erex territory. The scorpion bobbles along the ground until it reaches the fallen erex, then climbs to the wound and blends with the other translucent scorpions that together, seen from a distance, at first looked like jelly on the erex wound. "They don't usually come into the jungle," Arthur says. "The sandstorm brought them."
"How do you know?"
"We're the grid, James." I exhale, frustrated at the answer.
"They feed on the injured erex?"
"They do. And they brought the beast down."
"What?"
"The venom their stingers deliver is a paralytic agent. One sting is enough to immobilize even an erex." He pauses to watch them work. "They eat their prey alive."
"Does their venom work on humans?"
"Yes, and they'll be here until the herds leave, which may be soon."
"What do you mean?"
"The storm from the east will drive the erex back through here. The scorpions will feast on them as they pass."
Arthur leads me away from the fallen animal, east, toward Jericho City. I watch the ground as I walk now, mindful of the scorpions. I spot a few, but none attack me. They seem to be on their way to the fallen erex.
Arthur seems to read my curiosity. "They communicate via pheromones. When one stings, it releases a chemical into the air, drawing other scorpions. They help with the battle if needed, and share the kill."
We walk in silence, listening as the wind grows stronger. Arthur seems to know where he's going. Sure enough, soon we come across a human body, or what's left of it. It's a soldier with an infrared suit. He or she has been trampled by the erex herd, body torn apart. Nearby, an automatic rifle lies half buried in the ground. I pull it out and brush the dirt off. The magazine is empty. The person went down fighting, not much is certain. I sling the rifle over my shoulder as Arthur hands me the soldier's belt, which holds a sheathed combat knife and flares. He leads the way to three more soldiers, all dead. Their suits are punctured, too. I can't use them. I do, however, recover three partially filled magazines for the rifle.
"Here," Arthur whispers, pointing at a fallen tree. A dead erex lies near the base. A soldier is pinned under the tree, crushed, but otherwise in one piece. The erex must have brought the tree down, killing the man. We dig him out, and luckily he's about my size. It feels wrong stripping a dead man of his suit, but I don't see that I have a choice. His radio is busted, which is a shame. Arthur takes a grenade from the man's belt and pockets it. Then he takes the man's rifle, checks the magazine, and tucks it under his arm. He stops when he feels my eyes on him.
"My aim is better than yours. You may soon be glad I have this."
A few days ago, I wouldn't have dreamed of arming Arthur. Now I simply nod. Our relationship has come a very long way in a short amount of time. We walk in silence after that, both armed, both watching for any sign of erex. Clothed in the suit and armed with the rifle, I feel a little more confident in the jungle, as if I was naked before and now I'm clothed. The wind picks up, rustling the leaves and bushes. Thunder rolls overhead, and in the distance a droning din grows louder.
"Hurry," Arthur hisses. He breaks into a run.
I chase behind him, limbs and leaves scraping across me. Cold rain falls, adding to the noise.
It's a hard rain, blowing in the wind, drenching the ground and trees. Up ahead, I hear what I think is the wind ripping through the jungle. Suddenly I collide with something, hard as a tree trunk. An arm wraps around me and tosses me backward into the ground. The sound beats louder, coming closer. I realize then that Arthur turned back and tackled me. He's pinning me to the ground. My heart beats faster, a drum pounding in my chest. The ground next to me explodes, spraying my face mask with sticky black mud. In the flash, I see a giant foot, with gleaming pearly white claws digging into the ground. Then it's gone, thumping as the E-Rex races by. "You need to climb a tree," Arthur whispers. My mind flashes to the soldier crushed by the falling tree brought down by an E-Rex. Another E-Rex thunders by, showering sodden dirt down on me. Gunshots ring out in the distance. Jericho City. They're fighting. I struggle to crawl forward, to get out from Arthur's grip, but he pins me down. "Don't be a fool, James."
"I'm going. Help me or don't, but let me go."
Arthur shakes his head as he releases me. Gripping the rifle, I bound through the jungle. The cold rain turns to sleet, falling like tiny pebbles through the canopy, which mercifully slow the onslaught. The noise is like static over a radio, the gunshots in the distance like firecrackers at the bottom of a well, distant and faint. To my right, an E-Rex streaks by, 20 feet away, but it doesn't slow. I'm thankful for the suit. When I clear the jungle, I get my first glimpse of Jericho City without the canopy overhead. The grass field that surrounds it is almost completely burned, a charred expanse that has been churned by the herd. My heart falls when I see the barracks buildings. They are broken and crumbled. Tree limbs stick out from the sides. Dead E-Rex protrude from holes, unmoving. The carnage reminds me of Camp 7 after the asteroid strikes, a city leveled. At the end of the city, two ATV and trailers sit idle, soldiers crowding around them, using them to hide their body heat as they fire at the E-Rex trickling out of the eastern jungle. The gunfire is diverting the E-Rex so far, but more of them are coming by the second. The sleet assaults me, and my feet sink in the